Hello, Jordan.
Hello, Michael.
It's been a while.
Man, it has been a while, but happy new year, brother.
New year, new us.
Happy new year, brother.
Gary, brother. It's Hulk.
How's your workout today?
Really good, first of all. And second of all, just peering down at my heart rate every so often on this beautiful Garmin watch that you got me as a Christmas gift.
Oh, yeah, bro. How do you like the watch?
I love it, man. I love it.
You getting your zone two in?
Yeah, I have been. Not during, we did a zone two challenge in the mentorship. We can talk about that. But what I really like is the sleep tracking. Is so interesting.
Yeah.
It's confirming what I always thought, which is like when I think I sleep well, I'm sleeping well. And when I think I don't, I'm getting less REM, less deep sleep, waking up more often. It's really interesting.
It's been cool for me with alcohol because I don't tell it when I drink alcohol, but there's no question that my sleep quality is significantly worse when I drink alcohol just based on the information it gives me, which to me is crazy, right? It's like I knew that without this watch or without the app or any of that, but it's cool that it can detect that it knows that my REM is less, that I'm waking up more often, that my movement is way more. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like it. So thank you very much. I also, Hanukkah comes before Christmas, so it was a little, while I'm greatly appreciative, now you have a very late Hanukkah gift on the way that should be there before our next podcast. So
man, you didn't have to get, it wasn't like an obligatory, like,
well, this is, it didn't feel obligatory. It fits out of the goodness of my heart. So keep your
100%
eyes open.
It felt obligatory because Hanukkah had already passed.
Yeah, but this is, it's not just a random thing. It's something that you and I need.
Now we're going to get in this like back and forth.
No, this is it. Don't do another one. I'm not really a gift guy. I run out of ideas very quickly.
I'm not a gift guy at all. I never give gifts. Even like if I go to someone's wedding, like I'm always like, do I really need to get them a gift? Like, you know, I'm going there, you
Wait,
know?
What?
Like, so like I've never been a gift guy. Like that's one of the if we had had a public wedding or like a wedding where we invited many people, I would have been like, don't bring gifts. Just the fact that you take the time to come, you spend the money to get here. It's like, that's plenty. I don't like when people get me gifts. I've never been a gift guy. I'm not. But when I got the watch and you're like, oh, that's sick. I was like, oh, and then you said you put it on your Christmas list. I was like, I'm just going to get it.
Well, I'm greatly appreciative. Do you really not give gifts at weddings?
No, I give cash. It's just, I give them cash. It's like, that's like the best gift because they can do whatever they want with it.
Absolutely.
But I've never been good with gifting. Like my wife is very good at gifting. She's always super thoughtful with it, and she pays attention to what you say. So like she'll really get you very thoughtful, well thought out gifts. And I'm a good listener, but I'm not good with gifts. So it's very rare for me to do anything other than I'll like write a check or give you cash, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's the same thing I do at weddings is give cash. I thought you were saying that you showed up empty-handed and just said, hey,
my presence
is enough for this situation. Like, I'm happy you two are starting your lives together, but you got nothing from me. But here I am, mazel tov.
I know, like, me being here cost you a significant amount of money, but no, you don't get anything. No. If it's my buddy, like, I'll give, like, a big wad of cash, and I'll just, like, put it in their suit coat pocket or something, which feels pretty badass.
Yeah. I like that. Well, we got another rapid fire Q&A style episode, which might not actually be rapid fire. We might deep dive on some of these. We'll see. But unplanned. They were going well for us in our last streak of podcasts. By the way, I am unbelievably confident that we bang out 52 episodes this year. Like I truly can't see this year going any other way than having 52 plus episodes of this podcast.
Plus 52 plus.
There might be some weeks where we just grip it and rip it a few times. Let's call it 52. But if there's a bonus in there, I wouldn't be shocked.
Cool. I'm in, bro. I'm in. I've blocked every Friday off for me in full, like just for podcasting, like because for my own podcast. Because Monday through Thursday is like either Inner Circle members or me guesting on other podcasts. But Friday is just for my podcast, for me solo podcast or for mentorship. So if you ever want to crank out an extra one, could be 53 or 54 pods this year.
Yeah, it's going to be a real year, 2022. What was I just going to say? Do we have anything else before we dive into questions?
How have you been liking your Zone 2 cardio?
Oh, yes. Okay. So every month in the mentorship, we have a monthly challenge, and the winner of the challenge gets a prize, usually like a deep dive one-on-one consult with us. And most of the challenges are business related, obviously, since coaching and business are the two main focuses of the mentorship. But in December, we added a fitness component just because we felt like it was something that most people, personal trainers especially in the evidence-based community, were underrating and that it had disproportionate upside for health. And so we made a Zone 2 cardio challenge as part of the December challenge, and you and I both did it along with everyone in the mentorship. And I think I did one cardio session in the month of December. So I was in mom's.
How was that one cardio session?
I don't remember. It was probably bad. 5 below 0 outside, trying to get into Zone 2. Just walk, jog in my, not good. But January has been very good. I've had, I'm alternating between cardio and lifting days. I've gotten something in every day. So it's going well. It's kind of the, like we would tell our clients, you know, you have a bad month. That doesn't mean you just give up on it. It's pick up when you can.
Are you shooting for like X number of minutes per week in Zone 2? Yes.
Or no? Yes. 3 sessions by 30 minutes each minimum. But really, I'm lifting and doing cardio every other day. So really, I'm doing 3.5 sessions a week on average. And my first session was 30 minutes. My second session was 35. My most recent session was 40. So
wow,
I'm really going to be at like 3.5 sessions a week times 40 to 60 minutes. So it's going up and I feel really good.
Good.
Yeah.
My eye is bothering me so bad right now, bro.
I see that from getting poked.
Yeah. It was fine for like 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, every time I wake up, as soon as I wake up, it like was burning like crazy. So like I would wake up because my eye was burning. And then I went to the eye doctor yesterday. Oh God. And he's like, basically what's going on is when you sleep, your eyes close and then a scab forms that like you can't see with the naked eye. But like, so then when I open my eye, the scab rips off. And so like we have to use all these like crazy eye drops right now and hopefully in a month or so it'll heal. But it's just like watering like crazy right now. It's so uncomfortable.
Dude, I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
That is brutal.
It's all good.
It looks brutal.
Yeah,
like not comfortable. Watching you blink then, like 400 times per second right now.
Ugh. Yeah. And then, and for whatever reason, when your eyes go like this, then your nose gets congested as well. So like my nose is like running at the same time, just a mess. Look like a weepy mess right now, brother. I promise I'm not crying.
I believe you. How does that even fix itself? If it needs to form a scab, but it can't form a scab because it's on your eye.
It can't heal. The scab can't heal because every day when I wake up, I open my eye and then it rips off that scab. So the first thing we're trying is these like eye drops that I have to put in my eye like every hour. And then I have one that I put in before bed that's more of like a cream, and hopefully that will help. If that doesn't help, then they have to put like give like a some type of contact lens that acts as a shield so that even when I open my eye, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So trying to avoid the contact lens, but we'll see.
These are all costs of becoming a world-class martial artist. The costs of developing the ability to defend yourself / kill another if needed with your bare hands.
Yes, sir.
Jiu-jitsu.
Should we get into the Q&A?
Yeah, let's
dive in. Is there anything else we want to discuss?
Did you didn't happen to watch Batman Begins, did you?
Oh, shoot. No, I didn't.
That's okay. I'm sorry, That's okay. That gives everyone listening a chance to watch if they want to follow along for next week's episode, where we're going to be talking about, in my slightly undereducated opinion, because I've seen most of the big superhero movies, and I actually don't really like the majority of them, especially any that have come out in the last 10 years. But the Batman trilogy by Nolan, and specifically Bruce Wayne's origin story in Batman Begins, is so good and relatable that I just watched it randomly the other day, and it's worth doing a deep dive on. And I also, given both of our history with relating to anger as fuel for productivity, motivation, like a lot of good things stemming from a place of anger, will be very relatable.
It was funny. Mike was telling me about it, and I was like, wait, is that the one where Batman's like, where's the detonator? And Mike got like mad. He's like, if the only thing you remember, you think of with that movie is his voice, then you need to watch it again, because the lessons you learned from that movie. And like, I don't remember the last time I watched that movie, but it's been years and years and years ago. So I'm very excited. I'm excited to rewatch this.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I remember a lot of people not liking that about it. They're like, oh, his voice when he's Batman was so fake. And I didn't even notice it watching the movie.
My buddy David and I just would do that voice back and forth to each other. Like anytime we picked up the phone, he'd just be like, where's the detonator? Where is it?
I'm trying to think of when that movie came out. Off the top of my head, I feel like it was 06 or 05, which would have put you in like late middle school, which makes sense that you wouldn't have really cared.
No, 06, 05, I was early high school. I was like freshman.
Okay.
Freshman, sophomore.
Late middle. No, I wasn't late middle school in 05.
Not late.
I was a freshman.
I was in eighth grade. I was in ninth grade.
I wasn't in eighth grade. But the Dark Knight, the second movie of the trilogy, gets all of the love and is the highest rated on IMDb. And Heath Ledger's performance was unbelievable as Joker. So it makes sense. But the origin story, as someone who in any fiction that I consume, movie, book, etc., put myself in the protagonist's position and like basically judge how much I like it based on how much I can relate to / learn from the protagonist, Bruce Wayne's history is something that I always connected with.
Got it. Who do you relate to in Game of Thrones?
I don't want to say it because it's very arrogant and and I relate to in an aspirational sense. I relate to
Jorah?
No, not Jorah. That wouldn't be good. No.
I like Jorah a lot. Like that's who I like. Who do you think you relate to? Oh, Ned? Ned Stark?
Probably, actually, but you only get one season with him.
Not even.
The protagonist of the entire series is Jon Snow. And I don't even know if relate to is like the right word, because
aspired.
Yeah, we're talking about heroes. We're talking about like heroes in fiction. So it's like how you see yourself as the best version of yourself if you could attain that.
Oh yeah, no, not Jorah. That doesn't make sense. That wouldn't make sense. But I could see Ned Stark. I just like Jorah a lot, and he's super loyal. Jorah, he's like ultimate loyalty for, and also, you know, Jon Snow, but Ned Stark, I could see you being like, in terms of relating to, not necessarily aspiring Jon Snow, but Ned Stark is like, you die for your cause, right? No matter what.
Ned Stark's an ISTJ.
Oh, really? Wow. That makes sense.
Yeah. I definitely was both shocked and very, I wasn't pumped when he died in season one.
No one could like that. That was awful. That was, I think watching him get killed was actually what brought me into the series. Mm. Like watching him die was like, finally was when I was like, oh my God, how could they take away, in my opinion, the most important character at that point in time? Mm-hmm. I was like, what? And then I was like, all right, now I have to watch.
Yeah, they're okay with killing anyone. But no, not everyone was upset about that like us. Because
really?
Well, bro, you got to remember there's people in the world who read Harry Potter and don't identify with Gryffindor. There's people in the world who watch Game of Thrones and don't identify with Winterfell and the Starks. Like
crazy.
I distinctly remember I'm not going to call him out, is actually someone in the fitness industry. I mean, he wouldn't actually care, but who was like, you know, hardcore Slytherin, hardcore Tywin Lannister was his favorite character on the show. And when Ned Stark was killed, he said that he's an idiot and had no sense of, like, basically he put honesty, integrity, whatever you want to call it, above any sort of ability to, I don't know, understand people, like plot, scheme, like basically thought it was very boneheaded to go straight to Cersei and like tell her essentially that he knew that, you know, her kids weren't actually Robert's, but that they were Jaime's, and like that his stupidity got him killed.
Wow.
And I think there's a real argument to be made for that. But yes, I identify with Ned. You really sent us on a tangent here. An enjoyable one, but, you know.
Yeah, hopefully no one was hoping to watch Game of Thrones for the first
time. Ned dies? What? Yeah. But Batman for next week.
Batman for next week. I'll watch that. I'll watch that in preparation for next week.
Beautiful.
All right. Should I get these questions out?
Let's dive in.
All right, let's see. All right, Mike, how do you like to drink your protein shake?
Shaken.
Not stirred.
Well, hey, this is actually an unbelievable question. How do I like to drink my protein shake? First, I like to choose a protein that is reasonably priced from a CEO I trust that has solid macronutrients, meaning not a lot of tag-along carbs or fats. And then lately, I've been having one scoop, so like 25 grams with about 3 grams of creatine in it in water every morning. And that's the majority of my protein powder.
3 grams.
Yeah.
Not five.
Well, if I'm having it every day, you know, 20
saturated stores. Got it.
I mean, 20 to 25 grams a week's a recommendation. So you could go like training day, 5 grams a week, but, yeah, that gets me to 21 a week, which is a good place to be. But then sometimes what I'll do is if I want a protein shake as like a meal replacement, or a snack, and I want it to be a little more filling, not just 25 grams of protein, you know, basically 100 calories total. I'll blend it with almond milk, ice, a banana, and some peanut butter. And that'll end up with like, you know, 15 to 20 fat, 40-ish carb. And if I go 2 scoops of protein for like 50 protein, and that makes for a nice afternoon snack.
What kind of peanut butter do you use?
The kind of peanut butter that used to have people replying to my stories when I made content yelling at me because apparently Skippy and Jif have some fats that are going to kill me.
Bro, Skippy is the best. It's by far Skippy Smooth is my favorite.
Yeah, I'm not a chunky guy. How do you like your protein shakes?
So, I mean, you drink Legion, right? Mm-hmm. We both drink Legion. Cinnamon cereal used to be my favorite, and then more recently it's become cocoa cereal.
Dude, cocoa cereal every morning.
It's incredible. Cocoa cereal, and I just put it in Fairlife milk, and that's it. I used to be a big blender guy, put it into the blender, da-da-da-da-da, put ice in it and all this stuff, but I hate cleaning the blender.
Yeah?
I hate cleaning the blender.
You would do it in the blender with ice if you were only having protein powder in a liquid?
No, because I'd put other stuff in it as well. Like I'd put peanut butter in it, I'd put whatever else in it. Like sometimes I'd put spinach in it just to get some more vegetables in there. Just like a bunch of random stuff.
Under 7 times in your life have you put spinach in your protein shake?
Way over. Had a huge phase of doing that when I was a power lifter. Huge phase. Actually inspired by Tony Gentilcore because he did that when I was interning at Cressy Performance.
Shout out Tony
G. I used to do that all the time. But cleaning the blender to me is one of the worst things in the world. I hate cleaning the blender. And if you don't clean it quickly, it stinks and it's not good. So I was like, you know what, screw it. No more blending. Fairlife milk is just without question the best milk there is. So I actually have gotten a lot of the Fairlife chocolate milk as well. So I'll get Fairlife chocolate, put some cocoa cereal in there, and I'm good to go.
I love it.
Someone said, I have no idea how to treat sugar in a calorie deficit, which isn't really a question, but what do you think? How should you treat sugar in a calorie deficit, Michael?
It's actually, it's kind of a cool question. So sugar is a type of carbohydrate. Carbohydrate is a macronutrient, and there are four macronutrients, including alcohol, which add up to a total number of calories. So how to think about sugar intake, you could eat exclusively sugar, table sugar, and no other carb sources, no fats, no proteins, you know, just straight eating table sugar for a period of time and be in a deficit and lose body fat over that period of time. That's not a great strategy, one that I probably wouldn't recommend to anyone ever, but you could theoretically do it. On the other end of the spectrum, you have people who would argue that you shouldn't ever eat any sugar because it's, insert reason, bad for you, causes cancer, insulin, blah, blah, blah.
Addictive.
You know, adds to belly fat, like whatever. That level of rigidity and strictness is both unsustainable for most people and unnecessarily strict. So somewhere in the middle of those two makes sense. Historically, I've kind of taken a, you know, hit your macros for the day. If sugar makes up a disproportionately high amount of your carbs on any given day, so what? You know, make sure you're getting vitamin and mineral rich foods and eat as healthy as you can and you'll be fine. I've kind of moved away from that in the last year or two or 3 years just because while sugar isn't addictive like heroin is addictive, highly palatable, high sugar, high fat dessert type foods, especially for certain people who, you know, would call food their drug of choice, quote unquote, lead to overeating. Like we'll call it if it's a trigger food for you. So for those people, I would say staying on the low side. And when we say sugar, let's call it added sugars, let's call it processed sugars. We're not talking about fruit, et cetera. I would say keep sugar on the lower side and fill up on, you know, protein, healthy fats, high fiber, micronutrient dense foods, which is going to lead to you not only feeling better and feeling a bit more full in a deficit, but also is going to likely give you more energy and have you feeling better throughout the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I know when a lot of people say they're addicted to sugar, and then you say, well, can you give me some examples of the foods that you're, they're like, cake and donuts and ice cream. And it's like, well, like you were saying, it's not just sugar. It's also the high sugar, high fat combination that makes it so palatable and seemingly addictive. On like another type of food, but also similarly, quote unquote, addictive would be high fat, high salt. So things like French fries or pizza are also have a similar response. We know nobody is just taking spoonfuls of sugar or keeping like a bag of sugar in their drawer at work and eating it. But it's the higher sugar, higher fat combinations that are difficult for people. So if it's something that you really struggle with, then finding a way to moderate it, right? It's I think the old school, if it fits your macros, which is weird to say that that's old school, because I remember when that was brand new. Mm-hmm. I remember when if it fits your macros was brand new, but like the traditional, would eat whatever you want in whatever quantity you want as long as it fits your macros, turns out to not be the best for, especially for people who have a lot of weight to lose, are just getting into a health journey and really need to get it. Because the reality is, if you're so used to eating Pop-Tarts and cakes and donuts and ice cream, if that's what you're used to, you don't have a good relationship with it right now. And sometimes the best way to develop a better relationship with it is to more or less eliminate it for a brief period of time so that you can get used to eating more high quality foods. It's sort of like, you know, we've spoken about the dopamine detox, right? Where it's like you take some time away from social media or from whatever it is, things that are have a huge dopamine release. Then when you go back to them, they almost seem overwhelming in small amounts. Same things with sugar or higher fat, higher sugar things, where it's like you take some time away and then all of a sudden you go back. So you're like, whoa, that's plenty. Like I do not need much more than that. And that's where I think that could be very helpful, is taking some time away from them and then bringing them back in progressively.
I love that. If you use Oreos as an example, and I am someone who you know, my weakness or my like trigger is high sugar, high fat. Like I, you know, high salt, high fat, I don't feel good when I overconsume. We're coming off of Christmas, we're coming off of the holidays. I had many days where I consumed 3,000 plus calories in dessert foods alone and took under 1,500 steps for the day and like really was just like in holiday mode. And I can do that back to back to back days and feel pretty fine. I have no interest in ever eating one Oreo.
Yeah.
I have no interest in having that like moderation. And I know people, I actually like it to show the science of it, right? To show like, okay, I can consume 200 calories per day every single day of a dessert food and make really awesome progress. I like that as an experiment and I like when people have done it and like I've talked about it myself. But from a practical level, if I'm trying to lose fat or dial in myself, it's not enjoyable enough to expose myself to one Oreo and then not eat any more and like give myself that sensation, but then leave the other three sleeves of Oreos in the pantry. It's like, no. If I'm going to have the Oreo, I'm going to eat the Oreos till I'm uncomfortable and really enjoy it. So I like the environmental hack of like, hey, if you're going to eat it, go buy it and eat it. But if it tempts you, don't just keep it around and like have it in the back of your mind that it's in your cupboard, which can be difficult for clients who, you know, my wife has a sweet tooth or my kids like to have these foods around. You can't just tell them to never keep those foods in their house. But for people who can set up their environment, not keeping those foods around is really beneficial.
Yeah, agreed.
What do you think the top three martial arts are for that someone should learn before the age of 46?
What are the top three martial arts people should learn?
Jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, and?
I think jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai for sure. And then, I guess it depends, right? So like, I think jiu-jitsu for ground game, absolutely. And also like, if you're a smaller person, just sort of being able to handle yourself against a bigger person, jiu-jitsu for sure. Muay Thai for anything stand up. And the next one, I've sort of been going back and forth on this a lot recently, but I think having some type of self-defense specific in regard to weapons, whether it's teaching yourself how to use it or also how to go against someone if someone else has a weapon, mm-hmm. right? Like, and that could be called Krav Maga. Like they do that a lot in Krav Maga, but getting like specific training on like, you could have all the best jiu-jitsu in the world, all the best stand up in the world, but if someone has a knife or something, God forbid, like the number one, obviously just run away, like you don't want to try and fight. But if you don't have an option of running away, learning how to do your best to defend in that scenario, I think would probably be the most quote unquote functional.
Cool. I like that.
What are your thoughts on caffeine?
Very broad. I am always interested in talking about caffeine. I guess I'll go personal experience recently in the last several months, or we'll go historic first. I used to consume 400 plus milligrams of caffeine every day and like up to 700 in, we're talking 2014, 2015, 2016. Coffee, very strong Starbucks coffee, like a large dark roast at Starbucks is over 400 milligrams by itself, I'm pretty sure. You know, Monsters 140, Bang 300, a lot of pre-workouts if you follow the full dosage, meaning the serving size says two scoops, you actually use two scoops, that's like 300 to 350 milligrams of caffeine, which is a lot. And my understanding of the most recent research is that for the purposes of long-term heart health, 400 is kind of the upper limit for a daily caffeine intake. Now, in the last several months, I have maybe 0 days where I've gone over 300 milligrams of caffeine. A lot of days I'll have 100 milligrams, my non-lifting days. And on my lifting days, I'll have 200 milligrams, so like 100 milligrams when I wake up, and another 100 to 120-ish pre-workout. And the most interesting observation for me has been, and I'm not someone who historically like suffers from anxiety badly, but I have obviously had periods of time in my life where I've been more anxious, and those are directly correlated with high levels of caffeine / stimulant use and intake. In the last few months, keeping my average caffeine in that like 150 milligram per day average, I have had unbelievable sleep and zero anxiousness.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I both had years of abusing caffeine. I remember where we'd have like multiple monsters, multiple coffees, and then I'd still be like able to go to sleep, no problem. And then after I did that, the coffee for 24-hour challenge for YouTube, when I wanted to see if it dehydrated you, and I had over 1,000 milligrams of caffeine in that one day, and I had the worst panic anxiety attack of my life. I legitimately thought I was dying. Ever since then, coffee gave me real anxiety and like heart palpitations. Like my heart would just start going crazy. So in the last few months, I completely cut coffee out. I haven't had any coffee for months at this point. And I don't have energy drinks. So sometimes I'll have like a Diet Coke. Like I have a Diet Coke maybe like 3 or 4 times a week, but that's it, just one. So I think my caffeine has probably been below 150 every single day for the last.
Do you have tea as well ever?
Sometimes I have tea as well, yeah. Like, sometimes I have tea, but usually it's decaffeinated.
Oh. Dude, Diet Coke, I'm pretty sure is like 36 milligrams per can.
Oh, that's it. Wow, okay. Wow, so I've probably been under 75 milligrams for the last few months. And I felt great. Like, I felt really good. The other thing that has impacted it is this zone 2 cardio, where I deliberately did not want to have caffeine before I did cardio because I didn't want my heart rate to go up and put me into a higher zone. Mm. Like just because, you know, you're just from doing nothing, your heart rate goes up when you have caffeine. And I like didn't want that to happen. I didn't want that to screw with my training, which has been really interesting because I used to need caffeine to work out. But since I started paying attention to the zone that I'm in, I didn't want to have it before I worked out, which was really good. So that being said, I'm a huge fan of caffeine if you have no issues with it, and up to 400 milligrams a day is totally fine, especially in coffee. There are many, many, many health benefits of coffee. It's not like the mocha frappe cappuccino finos with like Oreo cookie and cheesecake inside them, but like a regular coffee, there are many, many, many benefits to it. Cancer prevention, Alzheimer prevention, performance improvements. Like there's literally amazing, amazing benefits to coffee from a performance enhancement perspective. The only sport that I'm aware of that caffeine has been shown to inhibit performance is in the biathlon, where I believe like they do cross-country skiing and they go straight from cross-country skiing to like shooting a sniper rifle. And the reason that is like because sniper shots are so precise that they can literally shoot in between heartbeats. And so because if they pull the trigger while their heart beats, then that can pull the gun just enough to make the bullet go off track slightly. So they actually deliberately do not have any stimulants that raise their heartbeat because they want to be able to shoot in between heartbeats. So but for literally every other sport, any lifting events, any sport, weightlifting, any other sport, caffeine has been shown to improve performance, improve focus, improve strength, improve power, all of that. So nothing against it. But for me, it was mainly because the anxiety that I was having as a result. And I was like, screw it. I don't want to have it anymore. And who knows, maybe I'll be able to go back to it and have no issues. But I've taken some time off.
Yeah. Have you noticed any changes in sleep quality?
No, honestly, like, it's always been a joke in my family that I could have a double espresso and then fall asleep within 20 minutes. I believe I'm called like a fast metabolizer of caffeine, where I've never had an issue with it. You've seen me like have a monster and then go to bed. Like it's not crazy for me. For whatever reason, I'm just able to do that. Other people, they cannot. But it was whatever happened after that YouTube experiment where I drank only coffee for a day to see if it dehydrated you. Yeah.
That was frightening because I don't know if you remember, but I came over in the afternoon.
Oh, of course I remember. We played hacky sack together. Yeah, I remember.
But I also remember like you had already had, I don't remember, 500 milligrams. Like you'd already had a lot. And then you had a full large iced coffee from Starbucks. And in my mind, I was like, I know iced or like cold brew is higher caffeine from Starbucks than their hot coffee. And Like I just remember turning my back for like 2 seconds to look at something, and I looked back and you were like chugging it. I was like, there's no way he's really chugging that. And then you like turned and looked at me and it was empty. And I was like, did you just chug that? And you're like, yeah. I was like, you're in trouble, man. Like, this isn't good. I thought you were gonna be like sipping on it for the rest of the evening. It was 3 p.m. or something like that. Like, and you just chugged the whole thing. I was like, oh wow, like this is interesting.
Yeah, it was bad. And then you left, and soon after you left, I started like my chest started getting tight, and then I just went outside, and it was freezing out. I got all bundled up.
Why'd you go outside?
I walked around there because there was like a, what's it called, the med right or something, or like the emergency, the urgent care. I literally was just walking around that one block because I was like, if I have a heart attack, I'd rather be right outside of urgent care than be up in my apartment.
Oh man, that is not a good feeling.
I just walked around listening to stand-up comedy. And I like called you, I called my buddy Adam, and I just listened to stand-up comedy to calm myself down and just walked around there for like 3 hours until like I felt better.
But it's still, even I remember then once you went back to your apartment, it was like you were starting to feel better, but you were still like very uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. And it's had lasting, like up until several months ago, like every time I had coffee, I would start to get that feeling. I was like, I got to stop drinking this. And I wasn't drinking a lot. Just one cup would give me that feeling again. So we'll see. So like everything, caffeine can be great, but don't abuse it.
Yeah.
Even for YouTube.
Yeah. And we'll move on. This is enough caffeine talk probably, but I've had clients who and friends and people in general who weren't specifically tracking how much caffeine they were ingesting. And when they finally did, they realized that it was, you know, north of 700 milligrams a day, which... And they weren't fast metabolizers. They were having poor sleep quality as a result. They were only sleeping 5 hours a night as a result. They were like their new baseline had shifted down. So they basically, when they did a reset and they did a few days of very low caffeine, 100, 200 milligrams, and then started slowly working their way back up, they felt the sensitivity again and realized that they actually weren't that productive. They just needed that much to get back to normal. And
jeez.
Yeah. So it's definitely worth paying attention to if you haven't.
Yeah. Maybe doing a little caffeine detox for a little bit, like cycle on and off. Have some periods where you have up to 400, then have some periods maybe where you only go up to 100.
Yeah. See what works for you. Pay attention to your body, your sleep, your productivity, your mood. Definitely.
All right. Someone said, is the standard bench too high for single leg hip thrusts?
I don't know what would be considered standard, because since I've been working out at Planet Fitness recently, given proximity of where I am and what I'm doing with my training, and the benches are high. Like, I stopped flat benching because they're high, and I don't feel like, you know, stacking multiple plates to get my feet in position. Like, so I don't know what would be considered standard.
I don't know any bench press bench, like stand, like any, you go to any gym, LA Fitness, Planet Fitness, Gold's Gym, whatever. I don't know any bench that you'd use for bench press. I've never used one that is like an optimal height for hip thrust or single leg hip thrust. Usually an optimal height is a little bit lower than those benches. So to answer the question, yes, usually it is too high. That being said, I've done many single leg hip thrusts on those benches and it's still been fine. It just hasn't been optimal. You know, it's not like you're ruining your progress, but sometimes you have to make adjustments, and sometimes it's, you know, it's not as comfortable, and maybe you're not getting the best glute activation, but you can still feel it. But yeah, generally I've found optimal height probably somewhere between like 12 to 16 inches off the ground, somewhere in that range is fine based on your height and your proportions. But yeah, so most benches tend to be a little bit too high.
Yeah, and if you have access to, you know, a 12-inch box or something where you can hip thrust with your back on something a little bit lower than a bench, great. But like Jordan just said, if you're a little bit higher than optimal, that's definitely not a reason to not hip thrust.
What is an underrated source of carbohydrates?
Bananas.
Wow, that came out fast. You like bananas a lot, huh?
I do.
Why? Why is it underrated?
Just think they don't get enough love.
Fair.
And I really, really like them. I mean, honestly, I'm a big, like, you want a variety, you want a variety for the purpose of micronutrients, a variety of fruit, a variety of vegetables, a variety of colors. You want fiber in your carbohydrates. But a lot of my food choice and recommended food choice is not only what you enjoy, but what makes you feel good. And for whatever reason, I like bananas more than berries in the morning. I feel better. I feel more energy after. Is that because of the texture? Is that because of the potassium? Is that purely psychological? I have no idea, but they're all good carb sources. And because I prefer one and feel better after eating one, then I would call it underrated.
I think I feel better from banana as opposed to berries because, like, if I'm going to have berries, I have to have berries with something. Like, I can't just eat straight berries. I'm not going to feel very full. I'm not going to feel like, I feel like it's a quick sugar rush and then drop, whereas something a little bit more starchy, like banana, has more substance to it, takes a little bit longer to digest. So I prefer banana in that case as well. I would say underrated source of carbs is oatmeal for me. I feel so, so good when I eat oatmeal. It's like high fiber. It's very filling. It gives you a lot of energy. What are you laughing about?
I was just imagining clipping that. I feel so, so good when I eat oatmeal.
I'm just so passionate about oatmeal. And just like regular, like quick oats. It's like the 60-second oats. Yeah, those are the best. They get really fluffy when you put them in the microwave. They're quick to make. They're super easy. Yeah. And they mix well with anything. And they can take on the flavor of whatever you want. So even if you just put a little bit of peanut butter in there, you get a nice peanut butter flavor. Like, so good.
I once remember a man saying that just because you could add peanut butter or jelly to something doesn't mean that that thing is good. It just means that the peanut butter is good.
Did I say that?
In defense of rice cakes.
Well, yeah, rice cakes suck. Rice cakes are like crispy air.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the texture of rice cakes either.
And they're so messy. You can't eat rice cakes without making a fucking mess.
I don't want to open this can of worms.
You opened it.
Is oatmeal not getting respect these days in the streets?
It ain't get no respect. It ain't got no respect. What's that comedian that says? Famous. You ain't got no respect.
I just didn't think.
Is that Rodney Dangerfield? I ain't got no.
I don't know.
It ain't got no respect.
Sounds like something he would say. But we're talking underrated. Are people on like an anti-oatmeal kick?
Man, you're just so off social media. Everything I say, you're like, Is this a big thing on social media lately?
I didn't know if there was an anti-oatmeal movement going on.
Well, there's definitely an anti-oatmeal movement. I'm going after them. I don't know. I haven't seen any anti-oatmeal
Sometimes you need to make fictitious enemies to motivate yourself. That might be a part of next week.
All those anti-oat people out there just really getting under my skin. All these people making anti-oats accounts, YouTube channels. I see it, writing books, anti-oats. Just getting, ain't got no respect for the oats.
All right. Next question.
All right. Let's see. I've been getting this question a lot, which has sort of blown my mind ever since I've started talking more about cardio. What's better for cardio, elliptical versus treadmill? And I get a lot of questions about, like, is the elliptical worthless? Apparently, there's like a big like anti-elliptical movement lately. Elliptical ain't got no respect. I'm a big elliptical fan. We got to make that a whole thing now on the podcast.
Ain't got no respect.
I'm a huge fan of the elliptical. I don't know why. Apparently, some like people are saying the elliptical's bad. The elliptical's great, especially if you've got like ankle, knee, or back pain. It's an amazing way to get cardio in with essentially no impact on your joints. The only other type of cardio that I can think that has little to no impact is swimming, but that's not very convenient unless you've got a pool in your house. And even then, it's still not convenient because you got to get all wet and then dried up and all that. And swimming is like really difficult. It can be a whole big mess, especially if you're not taught how to swim, any of this stuff. Whereas the elliptical, you just hop right on. You don't need a teacher. You just hop on and you start fucking moving. I love the elliptical, big elliptical fan. What about you, Michael? You got some respect for the elliptical?
I definitely have respect for the elliptical. I definitely disrespected the elliptical in the 06 to 13 timeframe because I was comparing cardio bunnies, elliptical bunnies versus, I don't know why we, bunnies don't get enough respect in that sense, but comparing that to weightlifting.
Bunnies ain't got no respect. Bunnies are so quick. Ain't got no respect.
But in terms of selecting cardio equipment to do zone two cardio, not only do I like the elliptical for the reasons that you just mentioned, specifically how low impact it is, but I also like variety, especially if you're doing a lot of hours. It's funny, in that Peter Attia Instagram Q&A from back in March that you linked me up, I was listening to yesterday, he talked about how much total zone two is kind of like a good minimum depending on the person. But then he also had kind of an offhand comment along the lines of, if you're a pro athlete and you're early in your off season, you could be doing 20 to 24 hours a week of zone two cardio.
I heard that. Crazy.
And obviously that's not the target. That's, I mean, unless you're a pro athlete and early in your off season, but for the majority of us, we're not doing that much cardio. But if you are doing a lot of cardio, just to avoid repetitive movement, wear and tear, we'll call it, changing your cardio makes sense, right? Instead of doing 5 hours of zone two a week and doing it all on the treadmill, walking, brisk walk at the exact same incline, mixing in the elliptical, mixing in Stairmaster, mixing in different inclines and speeds on the treadmill, mixing in different forms of cardio, mixing in jogging, all makes sense. So I especially like the elliptical for that reason, for variety.
Yeah, I've been, because my gym has, you know, the gym in my building, we've got like the treadmills and we've got ellipticals, we've got Stairmaster, we've got the rowing machine. And so if I wanted to do an hour of zone two, I could just spend 15 minutes on one of each. And it makes it go by so fast because it's just the variety. And like, instead of waiting for, because when you do cardio, you look at the time, the whole freaking time, and it can just seem like it takes forever, but 15 minutes goes by pretty quick. And you do that on four different machines, it goes by super fast. The other thing I've been doing is I've been watching Yellowstone while I do cardio. And that makes it go by wicked fast, man. That is just, what a show.
Yeah.
And wow. And it's also good because I found if I'm watching it and I start to laugh or something or like whatever, and I get out of breath, I know I'm going too hard. So it's sort of a natural way for me to manage my zone too.
And you're on season two of Yellowstone?
Yeah, season two. It's okay. So good. Okay. So good.
The season four finale was just this past Sunday.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the series finale, just the season finale. They're going to make another season.
Correct.
Okay, good. How do you start a social media presence without feeling vain or narcissistic? What do you think, Michael?
I think you need to ignore those feelings or emotions, even if you do feel like you are that. In a way to serve the greater purpose of what you're doing. Meaning you need to actually know why you're, because maybe you are starting it primarily to be vain and narcissistic, primarily because something's missing in your life and you want to fill it with likes and fame and notoriety and DMs and et cetera. That might be the primary reason. And if it is, then you probably shouldn't start the social media account. But if the primary reason is you genuinely want to help people, you have a message that you feel like you need to share with the world, you see the opportunity to build a business and have your own business that, rather than working for the man and having the man's boot on your throat, you have the opportunity to have something of your own that you're in control over. And that's one of those is the primary reason. But you also feel vain, narcissistic. Focus on the primary reasons as to why you're doing it. Because I struggled with this when I was starting, like when I launched my website initially, when I started posting initially. I think I was actually called vain or narcissistic by strangers and by people close to me. But and I probably was partly, but I pushed through because that wasn't the primary reason for starting my accounts. That wasn't the primary reason for continually posting. That wasn't the primary reason for doing what I was doing.
I think if someone is asking this question, they're already not very vain or narcissistic, and it's pretty clear that they want to do it for the right reason. I feel like the people who are doing it for vanity and narcissism, they wouldn't even be aware of it. Right? Like they wouldn't be consciously aware of feeling this way. They would just like, they would be more than happy to go on and start posting for likes and validation and ego and all of that stuff. Whereas someone who's saying like, hey, I'm going on and like, I feel vain. It just feels narcissistic. That's the kind of person, well, you're probably doing this for the right reasons. You're probably doing this because you want to help people. You're probably doing this because you want to grow your business so you can help more people and support your family and all of that. And there's also this feeling of, well, this feels vain. This feels narcissistic. Just the fact that you're aware of it is a really good thing. Because if you weren't aware of it and you were just like eating up all those likes and all, like, that would be a bad sign. So I think it's already a good sign that you're aware of it. And just like you were just saying, Mike, it's you have to pay attention to what the actual goal is. And some people might perceive what you do as vain or narcissistic, but I think the easiest way to overcome that is, as long as you're educating, as long as like the primary purpose of what you're posting is education as opposed to look at me, look at what I can do, or look at how good I look. So I would say, for example, not using filters to change your appearance is a really good idea, right? Because if you're using a filter to change your appearance, or using fucking Facetune to change how your body looks, or you're photoshopping your pictures, but even something as simple as you post on your story and you change the filter just so you can like, you like how you look better, don't do that. That is, you're being vain. You're trying to go for a certain look. But if all you're doing is just posting who you are as you are and what you are with education, that's the least amount of vanity and narcissism and the most amount of just pure education. And you're just being honest about who you are and what you look like. So if you're worried about that, I would try not to edit your stuff too much. Try not to make you look a certain way. I wouldn't do things like just try to get a pump to look a certain way, or, I would do things as you are. And that's probably the best way to eliminate those feelings.
Yeah. Great answer. Great podcast. We're back. One of 52 coming at you strong. We're here in January 2022. Thanks for listening.
Have a good one.
Bye, everyone.